Soul Talk Podcast is your guide to all things wellness. On this podcast, you'll find many episodes with the scope and focus on health, wellness, and life. Welcome to episode 55 of Soul Talk Podcast. This episode is all about my experience with Vipassana, which is an ancient Buddhist meditation technique. And also not just my experience, but the technique explained. So I talk a lot about my experience and a lot about what Vipassana actually is and why I would recommend it. When I refer in this episode to Goenka, he is the Burmese meditation teacher who carried this tradition back into India, and he basically delivers the Vipassana course through video and audio. So the teacher that's there with you to do the Vipassana is basically there to play his audio and video. So it's very much led by him, and these were all recorded at a meditation center that he was delivering the course at. These videos and audios were recorded in 1991. So if you go to Vipassana anywhere in the world, it's exactly the same timetable. It's exactly the same delivery of the course. It's exactly the same no matter where you do this in the world. So his name is Goenka. I refer to him quite a bit in this, but I don't really overly explain like who he is. So that's just to give you some insight. I done my Vipassana over Easter time in Innes in Ireland, down in County Clare, and it's in St. Flannan's College, which is a big old boarding school. It used to be used as a boarding school, and it's a big building from the late 1800s. It's not used as a boarding school anymore. It's used for Vipassanas, and it's used for like different scout groups and things like that. But Vipassana Trust Ireland, and I don't talk about this in the episode, so I'll talk a wee tiny bit about it now. The Irish Vipassana Trust have been knocking about for, I think it's about 20 years. Vipassana all over the world is free. It's completely donation based. So you go for free. Someone has previously paid for your spot. And you have the option to donate at the end as well to pay for someone in the future spot that can help them with this, in my opinion, amazing technique. But very difficult technique. So the Irish Vipassana Trust is a board of volunteers, and it's a voluntary all over the world, but the Irish Vipassana Trust, they run Vipassana in Ireland. They're currently looking for a dedicated meditation centre so that they don't have to keep hiring the facility in Innes that they currently hire. They want to have their own meditation facility so that you know, it's used all year round constantly for Vipassana, and to keep the sort of like vibration high of meditation in it all the time, like to make it feel, you know, you feel those vibrations when you go there. And just for it to be a sacred space where people can go. So they're looking for that at the minute. So just up front, if there's anyone who knows any information about that or can help, you can get in touch with our Irish Vipassana Trust. They also accept people to, if you've done Vipassana, you can join the board. Anyone can join the board and their annual general meetings and stuff. And you can volunteer your time. You can volunteer your time at Vipassana to go back and serve on a course for, to help with food or cleaning or whatever for other people who are doing Vipassana. Or you can actually help all year round by, you know, offering your skills. So for example, if you've got experience in web design or social media, I'm not sure if they use social media, but like finance stuff or like planning or looking, like helping them to look for their property that they're looking for and stuff like that. So that's just a wee bit of an overview on Irish Vipassana Trust and how it's run. So I'll let you listen to the episode now, and as I say at the end of the episode, if you've any feedback, comments, questions, challenges, or anything at all to offer to this episode, or you're someone who prefers a different meditation technique, and you'd maybe like to come on the podcast, I would love to hear from you. So have a listen and get in touch if you feel necessary. Thank you. If you are in any way curious about Vipassana or considering doing a Vipassana, this episode will give you hopefully a lot of good quality information to help you decide if it's right for you, or if you're going to embark on that journey, it'll help you understand what to expect. The first thing I want to say is that it kind of doesn't really matter what I say, because everybody's experience is completely and utterly different. There's no two experiences that are the same with two different people. There's also, you know, no two experiences that'll be the same with one person. You know, for example, if you go to Vipassana twice, you'll have two completely different experiences. And I know this by talking to multiple people on the course who have done Vipassana more than once. Some people I met have done Vipassana twice or 6 times or 10 times or 20 times. And to be honest, when people tell you that, the only thing you think is, and the only thing you say to them is, why on earth would you do that to yourself? It is truly the most hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I compare it to, although it's nothing like this, but I compare it to the marathon, because when you run a marathon, it's a really challenging, hard, brutal experience. But it also, when you're running and you've got so many miles to go, you're very emotional. Lots of thoughts come up. You experience a lot of gratitude. You get a lot of mental clarity because you're, you know, you're running, you're releasing endorphins, you're doing physical exercise. So you really go through the motions when you're doing a marathon. And then when it's over, at the end of it, you're like, thank God that's over. But then immediately, you feel like, that wasn't so bad. But you're in it, you promise yourself that it is hell and you'll never, ever, ever, ever do it again. A lot of people compare marathons to childbirth because they say it's the same thing. You know, it's horrific at the time, but afterwards you forget how bad it was because you've, you know, you got an amazing thing from it. And now that I've done Vipassana, I can definitely say, well, I haven't done childbirth, but now that I've done Vipassana, I can say that that's like, comparing it to the marathon is really the only comparison that I can draw up. Yeah, so wow, it's really it's a mind-blowing experience. And when you're in that meditation hall, I kept opening my eyes and looking around me just to like actually take in the experience as well. Like, you're not really supposed to do that, but I was trying to like actually remember taking the experience of sitting with 60 other women in this meditation hall, doing the work, doing deep work, doing our work. And that's what they refer to it as when you're there, you know. You can work in the meditation hall or you can work in your room at different times of the day, but it's referred to as work, you know, you're working, because you're working seriously, seriously hard to like get your flow with the meditation and to do many things. But initially, well, and throughout, it's very much all about quieting your mind. You know, Vipassana is a Buddhist, it comes from the Buddha. It's a Buddhist meditation technique. It is for everyone, it's universal. So it's taught by Goenka, if I'm saying that right, who was a meditation teacher and leader from Burma. But this is an Indian a technique that originated from India, and so Goenka, as well as many other teachers during and before his time, carried this meditation technique throughout history. You know, it's been around for the last 2,500 years. And he teaches that it's all taught by video and audio. And then you've got an in-person assistant teacher there for anything that you might need. And she watches over you and makes sure that you're not moving and you're doing your work. And our teacher was Dervil Ryan from she's from Ireland somewhere, but she was actually really amazing. Goenka, he teaches, you know, that this technique is universal, it's not religious, it's not sectarian, it's inclusive of all people. It's not about following, you know, a cult or a tribe or a tradition or whatever. It's just about you. It's about you and the universal law of nature, in that everything passes. So no matter what you're feeling, whether it's good or bad in any given moment, it'll always pass. Which actually, one of my lovely yoga teachers and friend, Eleanor Steen from Studio 52, she owns Studio 52, she always has said, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. So when I was away, I was thinking about her saying that, because it's so true. Like, everything passes, no matter how bad it might feel at the time, or no matter how good it might feel at the time, it will always pass. We're never gonna be like totally, totally miserable all the time, and we're also equally never going to be totally, totally happy all the time. It's just part of life. So this meditation technique is about teaching us detachment from all of from these two things, ultimately, from cravings and from our miseries. So we get so attached to when something feels really, really good, or when someone says something really good to us or about us, or you know, when we feel really good, when we're in certain people's companies or when we're in love or, you know, through sex or whatever, eating food, eating nice foods, you know, these really nice, pleasant tastes or sights or words or feelings or sensations in the body or in and around us, make us want more. And so it's really important that we don't attach to these things, because then it creates cravings, and then we want more and we want more, and when we can't get more, we're miserable, and so the cravings turn into misery, is the teaching. And you know, the teacher actually spoke a wee bit to me about, because I was quite fidgety and trying to get comfortable, and I wouldn't be used to sitting still for so long, and I found it really, really, really challenging. And she called me up and spoke to me about, you know, stop seeking comfort, stop moving your body and seeking these small bits of comfort, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, those small wee movements that you're making just to get comfortable. It's your craving to feel good. And she talked a wee bit about you know, like attachments and addictions, and how, you know, the heroin addict lying in the corner wanting more heroin very well could have started off as the little boy who once just wanted another cookie and another cookie and another cookie, and kind of like give a wee bit of background as to where addictions can come from. And addictions can be addicted to sex, addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, addicted to shopping, addicted to like love or feel like feeling good, must feel good. And really what we're encouraged to do is look beyond the actual thing that we're addicted to and look at how that makes us feel physically in the body. Like, what sensations does it give us and how does it make us feel? Because we're not addicted to alcohol, we're not addicted to drugs, we're not addicted to sex, we're addicted to how all these things make us feel, like this either release of endorphins or this oxytocin or like the feel-good sensation maybe that alcohol gives you after a really stressful day. And once you have that tin of beer or glass of wine or bottle of vodka, you feel this relief from all the misery of your life or your job or your toxic relationships or whatever it might be. So it's not really about, it's not at all about being addicted to alcohol as such, or whatever the substance or whatever the addiction might be. It's about being addicted to the feeling. We're addicted to the feeling of what it brings when we do that thing. And so that particular day when she called me up, it was day six, and you're kind of told from the beginning that day two and day six are big, as Goenka puts it, they're big education days. And for me, they very much were. I realized on the second day that I kind of had a couple of, as I would refer to them as, like, downloads or like epiphany moments, where I realized how much, well, I always knew I was an overthinker anyway, and I'm quite open about that on with my work and on social media and on the podcast, but I realized actually how much I make up stories, and we all do this, but I realized how much I actually make up stories in my head scenarios in my head about people or things or situations, and then react to them. Actually react to the story that I've actually made up, and then feel physically and emotionally and mentally something towards the thing that I actually made up that doesn't even exist, it's not even real. Which, when you think about it, and I was actually listening to a different podcast, on a podcast episode on Vipassana, I'll put it in the notes actually, of this episode, and it was talking about how, like, it's so normal for us to do that. We all humans do this in some way, shape or form, but actually it is, like, it's total psychotic. Like, it is total complete and utter madness. So I'll give you an example. So I'll not give you a Buddhist example from Vipassana. They share loads of stories. It's actually really lovely and helps you understand everything, but they're quite profound. I'll give you an example of normal life in how you might see this play out in your life. So you maybe are so used to your boss giving you extra work, but you're already under a lot of pressure and you've loads of deadlines to meet. So it's a Thursday afternoon and you're sitting at your desk in work and your boss is floating about, and you are anticipating that he's going to come into your office. He or she is going to come into your office, hand you a bunch of extra work and give you a hard deadline for it. So you're making up this scenario that hasn't yet happened. And then you start thinking of what you might say to your boss when he does this, or how it's going to make you feel, or, oh my God, if he does this, I'm not going to be able to make dinner tonight with my family because we've got this thing planned, and what will I do? And I need to be out of here for 5 o'clock. And then you start making up this whole scenario in your head that hasn't even happened yet. And you actually start to feel angry and anxious. Your heart's beating faster. You're maybe bringing on a bit of a sweat. You're feeling real anxious feelings in your belly, those anxious butterflies and stuff. Does something that hasn't even happened. And then this can play out in, like, many other aspects of your life, at home, with your partner, with your kids, with your parents, whatever it might be. So notice, like, try to notice. That's one of the big things that came up for me on the second day. And then on the sixth day, what came up for me was, oh my God, the sixth day was a fucking total, complete and utter nightmare. I wanted to run away. By the way, pretty much every day that I was there, I just wanted to go home. And yeah, I really missed home, and I was like, why am I doing this to myself? I have a happy family, like, home life. I love my boyfriend, I love my dog, I love my new house, I love my life. Like, why am I doing this to myself? Well, I'll talk a wee bit more about that later, because it does have a lot of great benefits as well, and that's why I stayed. But on day six, my skin started getting really itchy, like, really, you know those, you know when you get, like, itchy skin to the point where it gives you restless muscles, like, you're literally, like, you feel like your body's gonna, like, shake if you don't get this to this itch, like, it's complete torture. My body was doing that, and the teacher called me up after one of the meditations and said, look, you're constantly moving, you're constantly seeking comfort, you're constantly, what is it? And I was like, I can't sit at peace. And she said, I know you can't sit at peace, I'm watching you. And I was like, my whole skin is itchy, I'm so irritated, but also I'm even more irritated that you've called me up, because I feel like I was very still. That was the first meditation where I actually tried to stay completely still. And she said, look, this happens. We all go through this when we're doing Vipassana. We all go through this with long hours of meditation. you did sit still, but you were moving your head and your shoulders and your whatever, just to always try and seek out wee comfortable spots. She said, and with the itchy skin, this doesn't happen to everyone, but Sankara, so Sankaras are like our greatest miseries, or like things, yeah, like our misery. So it could be addictions or anger or anxiety or fears, or, you know, stuff that makes us really miserable. These are said to be, and as we know through trauma work and what the body stores and everything, these are said to be deeply rooted at the source of our being. So she said that, and she explained to me that when we're releasing our sankharas through Vipassana meditation, and I'll explain like a wee bit more about what Vipassana meditation actually is in a moment, because I realize I've just sort of went off into my journey and without explaining anything. But she said that it doesn't happen for everyone, but for some people they come out through the skin, and that was what was happening to me. So she said, you just need to stay still. You need to not give in to the itch or the restlessness or the discomfort and the unpleasant sensations, because you need to sit with it. It's the only way that the sankharas can come to the surface and go. So I was like, right, okay. And I left that meditation hall and cried and was like completely at my wit's end. But when I went back in, I really, really appreciated her talking to me, because when I went back in, it really gave me the motivation to literally not move my body. So for two solid days, every time I was in the meditation hall, particularly when it was the 1 hour sittings. So you get like multiple 1 hour sittings every day that is like completely compulsory. You have to be there in the hall. You're asked not to go to the bathroom or leave the hall at all throughout those hours. Whereas throughout the other hours, you've got the option to meditate in the hall or in your room, and of course you can move and go to the toilet. But throughout those particular hours of the day on the timetable, you're asked to be completely, completely, completely focused. So for those hours throughout the next couple of days, I did not move my body, and I mean, it was hell on earth. I was itching. I had to like breathe in through my nose, in through the nose, out through the nose, like loads, like to completely distract myself from the sensation initially, because if I sat with the sensation, I was in hell. I was like, at one point I felt like my legs were gonna reflex. Like I felt like my legs were like gonna jump into the air. I was so unbelievably uncomfortable and restless. And see, when you get through that 1 hour sitting without moving, and you hear Goenka's voice coming on and doing the chanting and then finishing the 1 hour, and then you're told you can have a break. Oh my god, the smile you get on your face when you realize that it really is all, it is completely and utterly a mind game. Like, it's literally all about really truly focusing your mind. Like, you can do it, you can do it, not giving into what the body needs. The body needs an itch, or the body needs to be comfortable. No, sit with it, you can do it. Like, it's really hard. So for the next couple of days, I realized that I was like releasing sankharas through my skin. She advised me also to soothe that by having some cold showers and, you know, getting changed regularly, just to ease the itching. And that helped as well. And then you kind of settle for a few days, and then you start to unsettle again because it gets closer to home time and you can't wait to leave. And you feel like you're the only person experiencing this I want to go home. I'm so uncomfortable. I can't sit here for one more second. I'm going to scream. Why am I here? On the 10th day, when the silence is broken and you're allowed to communicate with the other meditators and you're all sharing your experiences together, it's honestly the most absolutely beautiful day because it's nearly over, but also because you get to understand everybody else's journey and what they were going through, and you realize that you really actually were all completely on the same boat. Like, you look around you and you feel so uncomfortable and sore and irritable, and everybody else looks like they've got their shit together and they're having a really nice meditation, but inside they're screaming or they're working on their shit or they're sore or whatever. And it's funny how you perceive that not to be happening because it's happening to them on the inside. But when you share your story, you realize that you all really were in it together. And so just to sort of go back a wee bit, so what is Vipassana? So Vipassana is, as I said, a Buddhist meditation technique, which it's not. So meditation is, as we kind of know it in this Western world and in this modern day society, you know, is a lot of meditation is about changing your breath, you know, breathe in for 3 and breathe out for 6, which I teach a lot of in my yoga, so, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's changing the breath, so it's making a change to your current situation so that you can regulate the nervous system, right? Other meditations is like visualization, so visualizing that you're in a beautiful forest or a beach, or then this is taking you away from reality, so far away from reality. Again, there's nothing wrong with it because it is lovely and it is relaxing and it can give you that mental break and that physical break, and it can be very helpful to people who suffer with anxiety or who need relaxation or who have a lot of physical pain. So again, there's nothing wrong with that. And there's many other different forms of meditation too. But Vipassana meditation is simply to observe how things are exactly in this moment without changing it in any way, shape or form. So Vipassana meditation is about focusing on observing the breath without changing it. So if the breath is coming in through the nostrils and out through the nostrils in a shallow manner, that's okay, let it be shallow. If you're breathing a bit deeper, that's okay, let it be deeper, but just don't do it intentionally as such, let it be natural. If your left nostril's blocked and you're only breathing in through your right nostril and out through your right nostril, that's okay, breathe in through your right nostril and out through your right nostril, and vice versa for the opposite nostril. So it's about just noticing the breath, observing the breath exactly as it is. So for the first 3 days of the Vipassana course, day 1, day 2 and day 3, 3 full days, which does absolutely fry your brain eventually, you're focusing on just noticing the breath coming in and out of the nostrils. Eventually, I can't remember what day it is, I think it might be the 2nd or 3rd day, I'm not sure. You're asked then to start to focus on the area inside the nostrils, at the opening of the nostrils and at the top of the lip. So as well as just noticing the breath coming in and out, you're asked to then start to feel sensations in that area. And that is your primary focus for 3 days, those two things, focusing on sensation in that area and focusing on the breath. The idea of focusing on such a small area is that it sharpens the mind. The smaller the area that you focus on, the more it sharpens the mind. And the whole goal of Vipassana meditation is to purify the mind. It's also, I'll come back to the goals in a moment actually. But yeah, so It's only on day four that you actually learn Vipassana meditation. And whenever I started to learn, whenever we started to learn Vipassana meditation, I started to very much connect it with Yoga Nidra, because when you're doing Vipassana meditation, you're body scanning. So you're scanning your whole body from, you're told to connect with the top of the head. So where the baby's soft spot is at the top of the head. You're asked to connect with her and see if you can notice any sensations. And immediately I was like, that area in my head was tingling like crazy. And then you're asked to scan the whole skull, and then the face, the neck, the throat first, and then the neck. And then the right shoulder, the right upper arm, the right forearm, the right hand, the left shoulder, the left upper arm, the left forearm, the left hand, the chest, the belly, the upper back, the lower back, the right hip, the right thigh, the right shin and lower leg, and the right foot, the left hip, the left thigh, the left shin and lower leg, and the left foot. And then you're asked to do all of that again, but from the bottom up, all the way from, say, the left foot all the way up the left leg. And then you do the right foot up the left leg, or right leg. And then all the way up, lower back, upper back, belly, chest, hands up to shoulders, and on then all the way up back to the soft spot at the top of the head. And you're asked just to, all the only goal is to observe sensations in the body. And, you know, you get wee tingles and you get like nice sensations that feel lovely. And you're taught, don't attach to that because that'll pass. And you're also taught to observe uncomfortable or unpleasant, as they put it, sensations. So anything that brings you discomfort, like itching, restlessness, pain, and observe that. And you're encouraged to observe, don't react, observe, don't react, watch it come, watch it go, watch it rise, watch it pass. The law of nature, whatever comes must go, whatever comes must go. Watch and observe, but don't react. Watch and observe, but don't react. One of the biggest outcomes of Vipassana is so like just sort of going back to goals and outcomes of doing the Vipassana. But not just doing the 10-day course, you're encouraged to keep up the Vipassana style meditation every single day. And one of the biggest goals that and outcomes from Vipassana is observing the present moment as it is without trying to change it. Because things will always rise and things will always pass. So it's to teach us to practice non-attachment. So detachment from everything that we can control. And even everything that we can control, to not attach to it, because everything comes and everything goes. And ultimately what people find after Vipassana is that when they observe what's happening in the body and the sensations in the body and all of that, and the breath, and don't try to change it, just observe, don't react, just observe, is that the reactions to situations and people in our lives and in the external world, so external to us, that we would usually react to or feel strong feelings towards, we start to notice that those reactions lessen or go away. completely. And it's not like, it's not that Vipassana is magic, it's that it's purifying the mind, it's changing the mind, it's sharpening the mind, and it's changing how we think and react. It's basically rewiring the brain. So detachment is a huge part of Vipassana, and also relieving ourselves from fears, how we usually react to things that we're fearful of, how we would usually react to pain, worry, stress, addictions, you know, things that we crave or things that make us miserable. And it's really important to say as well that I feel like one thing, probably the one thing that absolutely no source or no one prepares you for Vipassana, is the physical pain in your body. Like, you are gonna be in a lot of pain because you're sitting on a meditation cushion on the floor 10 hours a day, and it's complete agony. That alone is really, really one of the worst parts of it. If you have any medical conditions, or, you know, you can't sit like that or whatever for any reason, you can get a chair and sit at the back. There were some people doing that. In the first 4 days, I developed lower back pain so severe that I genuinely thought that I was going to have to leave and go to a local hospital, because I was like, I've slipped a disc in my back. I don't know what's going on here. I could barely walk properly. And I had to eventually ask for one of those wee meditation back support seats that you sat basically under your meditation cushion on the floor. And once I had that back support, it was a game changer for me. I used that for the rest of the time there, and it really, 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 really helped to relieve my back pain. Even now, being home, I still feel that wee pain from time to time, so I've definitely done a wee bit of damage. And, you know, the teacher actually was saying to a few of us, you know, look after your knees. If you're sitting in an uncomfortable position, don't just say it out because you don't want to move in the meditation. Don't be stupid. Move if you need to move to get a comfortable position. Otherwise, you risk doing long-term damage to your tendons or your ligaments, or, you know. So it's really important that you look after your body physically when you're doing Vipassana, because you could do long-term damage. So the other thing with Vipassana is that it's, you know, don't identify with this good sensation or this bad sensation. Try to remain equanimous and neutral to all sensations. You know, that even if this sensation arises in the body and makes me feel good, or if it makes me feel bad, you know, it doesn't matter how it makes you feel, it's gonna pass. You know, it's gonna go, so don't attach to it. And we're taught in, you know, it's all about living Dhamma. So it's not about, you know, just doing this meditation technique and then that's it. It's about actually living Dhamma, which is to be loving and compassionate to all beings, you know, the trees, the earth, animals, other humans, and obviously ourselves as well. What else? Coming home was very, very hard. I'm actually only on so I get home on Sunday morning, and I'm currently recording this on Friday afternoon, so I've only been home 5 days, and it was only really yesterday when I started to feel a bit more normal and able to interact with other human beings, and to be near my phone. Like when I first come home, I basically had to keep my phone off and in a drawer for days. I turned it on occasionally to check in with family, but I just couldn't be near my phone. And not to mention being around people, I've still barely been around anyone, and going out to the shops was a very strange experience for me as well. It just really, you just don't feel ready for the world. I just didn't feel ready for the world. I didn't feel like I wanted to, or I didn't feel like I knew how to engage or interact with people. So I'd say, like, really try to take your time with that as well. If you're coming back from Vipassana, try to have a few extra days at least booked off work. Don't have any plans, you know. And the other thing is, like, people don't get it, you know. People won't understand Vipassana. And it's no insult to them, but they just don't understand what it is or why you've done it. So you'll be constantly asked, how was it? Tell me everything. Oh my God, I want to know everything. Tell me everything. And you'll also be asked, which can actually be quite triggering, I found, is, oh my God, 10 days off? You must be so relaxed. How was your days off? How was the meditation? And you're like, sorry, Vipassana meditation and a 10-day Vipassana course is not in any way, shape, or form a retreat or a holiday or a day off or relaxing. You are a way to do serious work on purifying your mind. Your mind doesn't stop. Your thoughts never stop. Not to mention the emotional and the mental torture and the physical torture that you're sitting in constantly all day every day. It's really, really hard. So what I would say to that is, you know, just try to not explain to people much, because they're not gonna really get it anyway. And try to savor your energy without over explaining to everyone what it was and why you did it and trying to justify it and everything. Just let that go. And I feel like naturally when you come back from Vipassana anyway, you actually don't even care about explaining yourself much, even if you're an over explainer like myself. You just kind of don't really care, you know. But so I've really said, like, torture and hell a lot. So why would you actually want to do Vipassana? It's not for everyone, of course. Not one thing is for everyone. And it's not for people who have mental health problems or like schizophrenia and stuff wouldn't be able to do a Vipassana. They wouldn't be allowed to do Vipassana. They wouldn't be accepted onto the course. So it's not for everyone. I think it's an absolutely amazing technique. A few things have happened since I've been home that I would usually react to, and I haven't. And I've kept up my meditation from I've been home. All but one day. If I'm honest, and there's going to be days where, you know, you're advised to come home and do 1 hour meditation in the morning, 1 hour Vipassana meditation in the morning, 1 hour Vipassana meditation every evening. Let's be honest, that's not going to happen. That's not realistic. If you can, great, but I've stuck to 1 hour a day, and I think that's plenty. And there's things that have happened, like interactions, just small things, because as I say, I haven't had that many interactions yet, to be fair, but that I would usually react to, where I haven't reacted, and I'm like, wow, that's insane. But that's not going to be the case if I don't keep up doing the work. So, you know, that's up to me. Why you would do Vipassana and why I've completely fell in love with Vipassana and this practice, like, even though it was so hard and it was quite torturous and it was wild, I can't even, to be honest, I can't fully even put it into words, but it's taught me that I don't have to put everything into words. Not everything can be explained, you know. It's more about our experience, really. I think Vipassana is amazing because it purifies the minds. It helps you to get the thoughts quieter. I definitely didn't achieve mental silence, but mental quietness, yes. It really helped me understand how my mind works and to really actually observe that and notice that, like, what I do with my mind and my thinking. It really helped me with that. So now when, like, thoughts come in that could potentially be a story that I escalate and then react to in my own head, I actually just push it away and be like, nah, we're not making up stories today. You know, no, it's not happening. Stop making up stories, Carla. And then it goes away. It is very good discipline as well. Like, having to sit in the same position for 1 hour. It's really good discipline. It really helps you to understand the strength of your own mind. As I say, it's helped with reactions. It's massively helped me with understanding and actually not from an intellectual perspective understanding, but actually from, like, experience and feeling and living detachment. I actually even can feel it with my dog. That there's this detachment. There's still all the love, but there's this detachment where, you know, I feel like I don't have to do everything at home and I'm enough in what I'm doing and I don't need to be Molly coddling my dog and I don't have to, you know, people can look after themselves in a sense. Yeah, it's sort of just helped me chill out a bit with stuff like that, because those of you who know me know that one of the reasons why I was actually going was detachment and detachment from my dog, because with great love comes great misery, because it brings all these fears, fear of loss and fear of, you know, and worry and anxieties and all of that. It also really helps you to accept that death is just a part of life, you know, and we'll see how I truly feel about it when someone close to me dies, and, you know, obviously that's inevitably gonna happen at some point in my life. I mean, it already has and it will again, it's part of life. But I was for a while there developing this fear of death, because my grandparents are getting older and I'm really close to one of my aunts who's older, and just, like, with the love I have for my dog, I know that he's not going to be around forever, and things like that was coming up for my, like, with my partner as well, and I was like, oh my god, like, what if people die? And, like, I started developing this real fear of death. It's really weird. I don't know why or where it came from. But, like, Vipassana really helps you to understand that it's massively just a normal part of life. You know, everything that comes must go and nothing is permanent. Everything is so impermanent. And it really helps you to, to understand and to try to practice being equanimous, you know, neutral. Yeah, so I feel like it's brought me a lot of peace, and I'm massively grateful for for the practice, lots of different things come up in terms of, I would say, like, things that I was being guided to work through, like some parent stuff, some stuff with my ex, some realizations with different people in my life and different things in my life. And all of it was, I can honestly say, hand on my heart, that all of it came up from a place of love and compassion. Like, there was no point where I was feeling like, this person has wronged me, this person, you know. It was all like, it basically helped me to see that person clearer and from a place of truth and from love and compassion, like, to understand things a bit more. And my brother's illness came up as well, from when we were teenagers, and I was kind of being guided that his illness was potentially one of the reasons where fear of losing people and death has come from in my life. So yeah, but I'm not going to get into the timetable, and I'm not going to get into, like, mega detail, but I am more than happy, if anyone listening is thinking of doing a Vipassana and wants to get in touch or wants to ask any questions, or even if you've done Vipassana and you had a completely different experience and you would even maybe like to chat to me about coming on the podcast to talk about it, I would love to hear from you. I'd also love to hear from anyone who would like to challenge the Vipassana technique, and who would even potentially want to come on and talk about other meditation techniques. One of my questions to my teacher was, so you're also taught throughout the course that, you know, there's no I, there's no me, there's no mine, I, you know, it's disconnection from this self, and our identity and ego, and that basically this body isn't ours, this body, you know, we're a pure soul consciousness. And so I wondered why, if I am not me and this isn't my body, why is the key to releasing my miseries only able to happen through feeling sensations in my body? And the meditation teacher wasn't able to answer that, because she said that, you know, great monks and whatever, research academics and everything, this has been being widely researched for centuries, and there's still no explanation for this. But so that's something that's kind of been sitting with me. So any thoughts or feedback or anything, please get in touch. And thank you so much for listening to my experience on Vipassana.